Welcome to chapter 14. Tonight we actually finished with our last lecture on our noun section, and so this is kind of an exciting evening. We're also, you'll note with me that the chapter is actually very short, so just a few things that we're going to wrap up here, and we'll be finished with our discussion of nouns. The chapter begins with an exegetical insight, which is actually pretty neat. The discussion here by Michael Wilkins revolves around the use of the relative pronoun by Matthew, and he mentions that Matthew is quite meticulous in his account. He's sometimes been described that way by other scholars, and the precision becomes very evident in reference to even the introduction of Jesus Christ at the beginning of Matthew's Gospel in connection with the listing, the genealogy that is given regarding Christ. Because right before we come to the discussion of Jesus, we have the following words: "And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called the Christ." Now, what's interesting here is that the phrase there, "of whom," which are italicized there in your book from Matthew 1:16, what's interesting is that relative pronoun, you might have to ask the question, of whom is it referring to? Is it referring to Joseph, or is this a reference to Mary? And interestingly enough, because the Greek is so specific in this case, the relative pronoun is feminine, which is really a neat thing. The feminine gender here points specifically to the fact that it's Mary as the one that's being pointed to as the one from whom Jesus Christ was born, which we've already established by the genealogy, as he points out here, that Joseph is the legal father of Jesus, but Mary is being emphasized here as the only biological parent of whom Jesus was born, just further backing up the fact of the reality of the incarnation. The Holy Spirit had come upon Mary, that Jesus was born of the Virgin Mary. So, kind of a neat little discussion of the relative pronouns. We do note in Greek that specificity of gender can be very helpful as it relates to pronouns, because in English, a lot of times we are really tied to just contextual clues and trying to make a best guess about those. The Greek sometimes will really clear up that issue because of the genders of pronouns. All right, well, tonight we are going to talk a little bit about the relative pronoun. A few things to mention about it as it relates to the English language, first of all. Relative pronouns in English are those words that are like who, whom, that, which, and whose. And it needs to be noted that relative pronouns do not introduce questions. We have another word for that. They're called interrogative pronouns. So there's a distinction between interrogative pronouns and relative pronouns. Relative pronouns always refer to a noun or a noun phrase. Just like pronouns, they stand in the place of nouns. Pronouns which introduce questions, as we mentioned here, are called interrogative pronouns. And I think we've already learned some of those in our vocabulary. Relative pronouns introduce clauses. By the way, you know, interrogative pronouns, they don't change. They're just a word that is just there. So we don't have to have a separate section on interrogative pronouns. They're just identified by the vocabulary.
It's actually different.
Not declined. Yeah, they're actually, and we've learned some of those even in the vocabulary. So, yeah, different word to introduce questions with those interrogative pronouns. But relative pronouns do inflect depending upon what they're standing for, just like all other pronouns do. Relative pronouns introduce clauses. A lot of relative clauses start off with this, like, you know, Jesus, who is called the Savior. So that clause, who is describing Jesus, introduced by the relative who. So be aware of that. I think even the example we looked at right just a minute ago, right, Randy, in Romans 4, had that very thing where we had a phrase there. What was the exact phrase again?
It was who believed in God or something.
Yes. Who he believed. And then God. Yeah, even God. Right, exactly. So there again, you could have just said, you know, God. And that's what the description of who was being believed there. Excellent. So again, relative pronouns can introduce clauses. They can serve as the subject of the sentence. They can function as a direct object or as the object of a preposition. Those are where you're going to find relative pronouns. Now, in Greek, relative pronouns are basically the same, except that they have case, number, and gender. And we can look at the chart on 14.7 on page 116, and you'll note with me that these look very familiar. They look almost identical to the article. Almost identical to the article. There's some slight differences that you'll note there when you're looking at them. One of the biggest things to look for, though, is that you'll see that all of them are accented, whereas the article, remember, might have a smooth or rough breathing, but it's the accents that help distinguish the relative pronoun from the article in the nominative, which has no accent in the masculine and feminine. So you'll see up there that where you normally see like ha, here it's actually ha, so you actually have a sigma ending also. But in the feminine, instead of just hey, it's hey, but there's an accent mark sitting there as well. So you're going to be looking for accent marks. And other than that, you'll also note that below that, there's no taus starting off these. So on the nominative, on the masculine line of these, you would have has, hu, ho, han, hoi, hon, hois, hus, where you would be normally familiar with ha, and then tu, to, ton, hoi, tone, tois, tus. So the taus are gone from the fronts of these, but otherwise they look just like those endings. So this chart shouldn't be that difficult to memorize because you're familiar with all the endings. Same thing happens in the feminine. It's hey, heis, hey, hein, hi, hon, heis, has. And in the neuter, here we have ha, hu, ho, ha, and then ha with an alpha, hon, hois, ha with the alpha. So, again, all those endings very familiar. Should be able to pick them up. Look for the rough breathings in the front of every single one of those. There's a rough breathing, as well as an accent with every single one of them. So an accent and a rough breathing, you won't find any taus. And you're pretty much going to know that you're looking at a relative pronoun.
It's really interesting, because the way it's constructed like that, it pretty much gives itself to immediately being able to recognize its antecedent as you're reading it, huh?
Yes.
Exactly like its ending.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Yes. Especially if you know if you're running a 2-1-2 paradigm.
Right.
Yes. You're gonna see. It's gonna look just like exactly. It's gonna look just like the thing that its antecedent is. And again, a good point to bring up the word antecedent. Remember, antecedent is the word for which the pronoun refers back to. Right. It's standing in the place of. So you're absolutely right. If you have a 2-1-2 pattern going on there, then yes, you're gonna see the ending look just like the word that it's standing in the place of. Obviously, you have a third declension or something, so it's
right.
Different. But very good. Now, the number and gender of relative pronoun are the same as its antecedent. Number and gender match the antecedent. Case of a relative pronoun is determined by its function in the sentence. And this is what we found typical to pronouns, right? If it's functioning as the subject, it's going to be in the nominative case, but its number and gender are going to be determined by its antecedent.
Huh.
So if it was God that was standing in the place of, you know, theos is a masculine word, also God as a person, masculine, right? So as a result, the relative pronoun standing in the place of that, if it was the subject, would be has. It would be translated who in English. And it would be masculine singular, just like theos is masculine singular, but it would have nominative case because it's functioning as a subject. 14.10 is a good point to make. The case of the relative pronoun is determined by its function in the relative clause. So, for example, here we have the man whom we know teaches us. Ha'anthropos han genoskamen didaskeke. Hamas. So here we have the man whom we know teaches us. In this example, you can see that even though the antecedent anthropos is nominative, the relative pronoun han is accusative because it is the direct object of the verb gnoskamen. So here would be the man we know, whom we know teaches us. So it's really here, the man we know who teaches us. So the idea here is, even though that little phrase, whom we know, is actually a relative clause describing man, whom is actually in the accusative case, because it's functioning within that clause as we know who. And here it becomes whom we know. So it's okay. The one that we know whom. So we use it in English, we would say whom we know. So it's going to take its case by its function within the relative clause, whenever it's functioning within a relative clause. So that's a trick to keep in mind on page 117. Other things, some translation tips that are given here due to English grammar. If a relative clause modifies a word, then the relative pronoun is translated with the simple who, which, or that. The example given here, the man who is sitting at the table is my pastor. So as a relative clause modifying a word, then we use who, which, or that. Relative clauses, though, can also function as a subject, direct object, indirect object, object of the preposition, etc. In other words, they can perform almost any function that a noun can. In these cases, it may be necessary to add a pronoun to the clause to make better sounding English. For example, in this sentence, who will be first will be last. The relative clause is the subject of the verb will be. To make the translation smoother, you could add a personal pronoun, he who will be first will be last. And it gives another example. Example, who does not take his cross is not worthy of me. It's translated normally, he who does not take up his cross is not worthy of me. It says here, you can also add a demonstrative pronoun, give the good grade to those who deserve it. Rather than give the good grade who deserve it, to who deserve it, you can say to those who deserve it. The idea here is that when we're translating in English, sometimes some added pronouns can be helpful and can be determined by context. Relative clauses, remember, are always dependent. Relative clause always dependent. So it's not going to function on its own. And if you're looking for the main verb of the sentence, you won't find it. Exactly. You won't find it within the relative clause. They will never contain the main subject or the main verb of the sentence. That's it. That's the whole thing. So really just a discussion of the relative pronoun. Let's quickly go over vocabulary. We'll read these off. First one there, aletheia.
Aletheia.
Very good. This word meaning truth. Irene.
Irene.
Irenes. This is peace. Enopian.
Enopian.
This is before. If it comes to its object will happen in the genitive. It always means before. Epongalia.
Epongalia.
This is promise. Hepta.
Hepta.
This is seven. And it is indeclinable. It just stays like that in all contexts. Thronos.
Thronos.
Kind of looks like what it is. Throne. Here's a good one. Jerusalem.
Jerusalem.
Very good. This is Jerusalem. Kata. Also sometimes kat and kath. Remember when that happens?
Yes. Is it if there's a... Oh, that is
preposition.
If the following word starts with
a
vowel or a consonant.
Very good. The kath will be used if it's the following words of vowel.
Okay. What do you?
Kath is used when the following is a rough breathing.
Oh, okay.
So you'll drop the final vowel if it's followed by a vowel. Often it goes to a theta if it's followed by a rough breathing. Kephale.
Kephale.
Or kephale, I guess. This means head. Very important word. It relates to gender roles. Hadas.
Hadas.
This means way, road, journey, conduct. Here's our relative, who, whom, which is has, hey, ha.
Has, hey, ha.
Hate.
Hate.
This means when.
How's that different than the other?
singular, so that's hockey, huh? That's
yes. Hockey. Yeah, and look at footnote number 9. Good question. Do not confuse this word with hati. So, epsilon versus an iota. So, hate with the epsilon is when. Hutos.
Hutos.
This means thus, so, or in this manner. You sometimes see thusly with this phrase. Ployon.
Ployon.
This is ship or boat. Phrema.
Phrema.
This is phrema. Word or saying. Yeah, rough breathing there.
Okay.
Te.
Te.
And so or so. Kyr.
Kyr.
Or care, yes.
Care.
Very good. You said it right. I said it wrong. Care or keros. This means hand, arm, or finger.
So is it just contextual?
Yes.
Any one of those.
Yes, it's contextual.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Are there other words for being more specific?
Not that I'm aware of. Maybe potential, but I'm not sure. I'm not aware of if there are. And then suke.
Suke.
Which is soul or life or self. Well, having known all those words up to now, that's 169 words to date, and you'll see that just over 66% of New Testament word occurrences, 2 out of every 3. Pretty, made some good distance on that, knowing 2 out of every 3 words occurring in the New Testament, knowing that 169 words. So, anyway, great. You also see this in previous words on page 120 that are mentioned here, on, which when used in conjunction with relative pronoun, it can make the pronoun indefinite, who becomes whoever, or on, which means if, when, or whenever. So you've already kind of learned these. But a lot of times you'll see them with relative pronouns. So there's also just a last note here on page 120, advanced information. Has here the word attraction. Greek, as is the case with any language, does not always follow the basic rules. All spoken languages are in constant state of flux, so nice, neat grammatical rules often break down. This is the case with the relative pronoun. Its case is supposed to be determined by its function, but in certain situations we see that it is altered to be the same case as its antecedent, as if it were modifying it. This is called attraction. Attraction usually happens when the relative pronoun occurs in the immediate proximity to the antecedent, when the antecedent is dative or genitive, and when the relative pronoun normally would be accusative. Here's an example. Here we have the time of the promise that God promised to Abraham has drawn near. The relative pronoun here, haste, should have been the accusative hain, because it's the direct object of the word homologation, but it was attracted to the genitive case of its antecedent. So, as a result, it's just saying here that there are some occasions where the relative pronoun might change case due to its proximity to the antecedent, the word that it's standing in the place of. And the point that they even mention this is just to say, remember, we're not going from English into Greek, but just being able to recognize if all of a sudden you've got some weird situation like that. That did occur with the relative
gender
pronoun.
Remember
the gender and remember Randy, the gender and the number are already going to match its antecedent.
Okay, so that
if the only thing that with a relative pronoun that could be different from its antecedent is case. And so we're saying here that even in the occurrence where it could have a different case because it's functioning differently in the sentence, it might pick up the case of its antecedent just because of proximity to its antecedent, even though it's being utilized as in a different function within the sentence.
Okay.
All right. Well, that does it. So, God bless you guys.